Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder back with us as always is Taryn Sharma. Not much going on in Mets land, making that depth push very much evident. I guess everyone's kind of waiting for the Yoshinobu Yamamoto shoe to drop. Taryn, how's your lead up to the holiday season going?
Yeah, you know, we're just enjoying Koreamus part two this year. I'm doing well. I'm really excited to just see this kind of work itself out. I feel like it's not just the Mets that are being held hostage here by Yamamoto. It's the entire market that really hasn't moved. I think a lot of us expected things to start picking up after Ohtani made his decision, and we're a couple weeks removed from that now and still nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I'm encouraged by the fact that the Mets have, again, continued their push to fill out their depth roles. And I think the trade they made this week was actually one of the best, you know, minor moves that we've seen this offseason, at least from the Stearns front office. But, you know, let's jump into that. You know, the Mets picked up Adrian Hauser, starting pitcher, and Tyrell Taylor, who's a very good defensive and very speedy outfielder, can play all three outfield positions, does have some pop in his bat. I'm sure that the Mets are waiting for Yamamoto, or at least, you know, whatever this process, waiting for this process to play out before they continue on with their more pressing matters this offseason. But in the meantime, I guess I'm actually okay with the minor stuff they've done, especially what we saw this week. How do you feel about the move?
Yeah, well, this is somebody that Stearns is very familiar with, right? Coming over from Milwaukee. The prospect that they sent out, Coleman Crow, the guy that they got in exchange from the Angels for Eduardo Escobar. So yeah, that trade already paying dividends, allowing the Mets to pick up a couple of depth pieces here for a guy who is going to miss this entire year with Tommy John, and was already towards the back of what are the current rankings of Mets prospects. So yeah, I think it's a good little piece of business. Hauser is going to compete for that fifth starter role. And I also am intrigued with any arm that they pick up at this point, because, you know, we have this much ballyhooed pitching development center that has just launched in this past few months. And so I'm excited to see what exactly they do. The thing is, these great teams, if you think about being the Dodgers East, right? The Dodgers' ability to pick up these guys, random guys, cast-offs from other teams, and turn them into productive major league players just at the margins is what makes those teams competitive year in and year out. That's how you win 100-plus games for like a decade, right? It's that you have better depth than everyone else, which is why the playoffs is a completely different matter, right? You can lose games in a short series because it's about how does the top of your roster really stack up to the top of other teams' rosters over a very short sample of games. So I'm excited to see what this can do for the Mets this year, and I think that it's a great sign of things to come.
I do. I like the Hauser addition, and I like Taylor too. I think who was it? Puma from the New York Post mentioned that it kind of checks all the boxes that Michael A. Taylor was checking when the Mets were showing interest in him, well, reportedly a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, we'll get to Taylor in a second. But with Hauser, you know, the Mets have been, I guess, so far have been going after big sinker ball guys, big slider guys, nice changeup guys. What impresses me most about Hauser, one, his, you know, I guess limiting of walks. He doesn't walk a bunch of guys. I like his four seam a bunch, and it's not your typical, like, you know, today's MLB four seam where everyone's kind of going for that, you know, high riser, doesn't drop a lot. Everyone's kind of looking for that sort of blueprint. Hauser's got a four seamer that moves horizontally, among some of the more, I guess, highly quantified four seams in the game as far as horizontal movement. He averages 9.2 inches horizontal, and that's going in towards left-handed hitters. That's 42% break versus average and 2.7 inches above average, which is, you know, well into the 80s, if not low 90s, as far as percentile rankings. His slider is done well. If they're looking at Hauser, let's say, and again, this wouldn't be really comparable to from a reliever to starter type of comparison, but look at what Edwin Diaz's, you know, heavy horizontal movement four seam and slider combination has done for him. I think that Hauser, under a new set of eyes, under a person who's familiar with what he brings to the table, former high round draft pick, I think he was a second rounder. Now he's got some, I guess, veteran savvy to him. I think that it's almost a perfect storm for Hauser to really hit that next gear. And just like the Dodgers East that you mentioned, I think the Mets kind of struck while the iron was just at the perfect temperature to really make the most out of a trade like this. And, you know, without Peterson in the mix, and if you're still, of course, they're going to fill out the rotation as before spring training begins. Of course, once Yamamoto signs, they'll either have him in the fold or they'll have to pivot and fill out the higher end of the rotation. But I love the depth. I love the internal competition that they're trying to, or at least appearing to try to cultivate. And yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm actually encouraged by it. Do you think that Hauser could be, well, I guess first question, do you think that Hauser could be a true option in the back end of the rotation? And, you know, losing Peterson as a left-hander and bringing in Hauser, it's not quite the swap, but productivity is productivity. So we'll take that. And two, I guess, not really related questions, but you've been in front offices. When you're stuck waiting and for a guy who might be high on your list, are you in fact like handcuffed and just kind of waiting, or do you try to make the most out of the lull in activity?
Yeah, I can't say that either of the teams I was with were in those positions in winters, but I don't think that the Mets are necessarily handcuffed. I think that they are kind of just waiting to see how they're going to allocate those resources. Because I don't think it's a sure thing, right? And people have reported this, that the Mets are not going to go out and spend a bunch of money, even if they don't get Yamamoto for like $200+ million here. They're not going to then go drop $100 million on Jordan Montgomery or whatever. But I am interested to see if they then work the trade market a little bit more. And I think that this is probably more symbolic of what they might do here. Not necessarily that they would part with higher end prospects to do it, but to take some risks on some guys and see if they can figure something out. As for Hauser, I think that he falls into that sort of McGill, Lucchese, maybe Jose Buto, that sort of mix of guys that are in that 4-5 kind of discussion. I think you're almost certain to see Severino get a starting role at least to begin the season, but I think that it's at the very least a nice depth move. I don't think that they gave up very much. I think that this is a deal that was motivated heavily by dumping salary from Milwaukee. They'll clear off some $7 million or something from their books. And I think that's been an organizational mandate for them. And so it gives the Mets another option. And so, yeah, just a good piece of business. And I think that the Mets are definitely like waiting and seeing, but I don't think that it's actually stopped their progress. It's just that most of the market, I think, doesn't want to necessarily move. I think there are some other, even Brewers arms that might be on the move after this, but they're waiting to see who doesn't get Yamamoto and who's interested. One interesting thing, I don't know if you've been following Zach Scott, who was briefly the Mets general manager and is a good guy and was very generous with his time with me when I interviewed with the Red Sox when he was an assistant GM there. And so I've always had a lot of admiration for him, despite whatever off the field issues have happened. He is a great follow on Twitter. And so he tweeted out after the Hauser thing happened that Milwaukee, and this would be Stearns, had asked for Jeff McNeil in exchange for Hauser just a couple of years ago. So he said that this is a better deal. And so, I think it's good business. We'll see if they can get him to even be more of an extreme ground ball pitcher. He's just over 50% right now. I'm excited to see what happens. They picked up a fourth outfield kind of spot, too, with Taylor. So, good business.
I like Tyrone Taylor. I think it's a great addition. I think it's going to be a more productive addition than a Michael A. Taylor hypothetically would have been. I was looking through, he put up 5 outs above average per Statcast in center field in 2022. And he did that in just 669 innings in center field. I wish I had a decent comparison to bring that to, because I'm kind of just going through his numbers and stuff and pointing out things that jump out at me. And that really jumped out at me. Even if you look at his power numbers. So over his last three seasons, he's hit 39 home runs over his last 919 plate appearances. Over 162, it averages out to about 21 home runs. Even last season, 10 home runs and 231 at bats. Let's say he's getting 650 at bats. You're looking at like 27, 28 home run season. On that pace, of course, which you really can't put a lot of weight into because there's going to be slumps and downturns. But I like the addition. I like the upside of it. And I think that's been kind of a hallmark of what the Mets have been trying to do so far, is look for guys with upside. And if that's the painting with the Dodgers East brush, I dig it. I enjoy the allure of it. I enjoy the potential of it. I think that it could work out well, especially now that the Mets are putting so many resources into research and development. And we know we've heard all about the new pitch lab, and of course, R&D and the analyst staff has just grown exponentially. These types of moves and this type of push towards high ceiling, or at least reasonably high ceiling depth, and whether it be at the AAA major league level or even lower. And of course, you can't put too much stock into a AA hitter coming into the system and saying, "Oh, well, we have good vision for you," because it's still so early. But you're bringing on a guy who's a 4A player, and that's not a demerit to Tyrone Taylor, but he's been up and down. He's hasn't really made his mark in the majors just yet, but he's certainly, been productive. And I think that's what the Mets are looking for. I just love the objective of going after guys with potential and having the confidence in your new revamped organizational, your organizational depth chart to get the most out of these guys, whether it be Severino, whether it be Hauser, whether it be Taylor, whether it be anybody they're looking into. It might even be a higher profile move they make later in the offseason. And they're making that move because, you know what, we think there's another gear in this guy. And even if it's a Yamamoto, look at his stuff now. And then, you know, you're going to have to adjust to major league hitters once they get a book. That's, I'm sure, been part of the pitch to Yamamoto is, look, we have state-of-the-art technologies to provide us with data, provide us with knowledge and information to make our players as good as they can possibly be. And I'm sure everyone's going to be throwing this at him. Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox. I'm sure that the Giants have been involved in these things. You know, these are all organizations that are trying to push forward into the future as far as analytics. The Yankees, of course, had to come out and, oh, we're not analytically based. Yeah, I know. You have to play these games, but going with the eye test and the gut as opposed to analytics, versus analytics, as opposed to a hand-in-hand kind of working baseball with all the information you can, you know, that's the way it's got to be now. And I think that whether it be the Mets, the Dodgers, the Yankees, whoever, I think finding that balance is going to be key. And if you're bringing in guys who are going to give you a blueprint for how their new directives and directions and what they're expecting their research and development money to do, these guys are going to be like the guinea pigs for this. And if you can get these high rises out of Hauser, out of Severino, if you turn Severino into pre-injury Severino, or even just post-injury Severino, where he was, I don't want to say the same guy, but just as effective, you know, you're looking at one of the best signings possibly of the offseason. If you can turn Severino into a number two productivity level guy. But even if you can make Hauser a solid back end guy, if you can make Taylor one of the more versatile and hopefully prolific bench players in the National League or National League East or whatever, however you want to view it, this is going to be what brings in more players and better players in the future. Look, we have a blueprint. It's going to work. We have evidence. You know,
yeah.
Putting Yamamoto aside, I mean, I like everything about it. I didn't mean to drone on there, but I'm encouraged. I know the fan base is really, you know, oh, we're getting impatient. Of course you are. It's almost Christmas, and the Mets have really just made depth moves. I'm just saying I like the depth moves. I really do. I like where this is going.
Yeah, and really it's not just a Mets thing, right? Most of the market has not moved, with the exception of the Soto trade or the Ohtani signing. Like, not that much has really happened. I guess the Glasnow trade. But yeah, it's been fairly quiet so far. And so this will be a big move. Imanaga is going to be another big move. Are the Padres going to move more salary? Because they have other guys that are that plug right into a lineup. I'm really thinking about Fernando Tatis. Like, if that's somebody that they have to move for whatever reason, that's something that I think that the Mets, you know, you throw your entire offseason plan away. Like, that's the guy that you really move high-end pieces for. So
you're doing the same thing for Machado if he becomes available. I know that the organization loves him, the city loves him. Probably the last guy that they're going to trade, even though he makes a lot of money, he's still the guy who's going to be there, you would assume. But if he does, are you making the same sort of moves for Machado?
He doesn't move me the way that Tatis does. I think a lot
of it. I respect that.
But having somebody that you could plug right in at third base for this team in particular, I think that solves a lot of problems, right? Especially if they were kind of counting on Mauricio to be in that mix, and maybe they were feeling better about him than maybe Beatty or Vientos. I think that solves a lot of problems and is a middle of the lineup bat right off, right in the middle of your offseason. So, I think that there's a lot of dominoes left to fall, but this is kind of holding up, I think, the rest of the market. It's not the Mets that aren't making moves. I think the Mets are doing what they're able to do within the confines of the stagnation that we're currently seeing. But I think more moves are yet to come, obviously.
Well, you talked about the trade market, and I do think the trade market's going to pick up considerably, not just Mets league-wide. I think that's going to be, by the end of the offseason, it's going to be a very highlighted segment of the offseason will be all these trades. I feel it coming because we haven't seen a bunch of it yet. You talk about untouchables. You talk about the possibility of a big name getting floated out there. Let's say a Tatis comes out there. Nobody wants to move a Luis Angel Acuña. I think everyone's got really high hopes for him, for Drew Gilbert, Ryan Clifford. I really like Ryan Clifford. Jet Williams, everybody seems to adore. Who are you breaking the mold for? I mean, I guess who are you breaking the mold really wasn't the right phrase. Who are you shaking up that organizational plan for of not moving your high-end guys? Even though you just got an influx with some really savvy moves by, you know, biting the bullet on Scherzer and Verlander and getting back some really great prospects in return. You know, are you willing to part with some of these guys if you see that just unavoidable opportunity come your way?
For Fernando Tatis?
For Tatis. I mean, let's say that someone that we haven't even discussed, I didn't even want to throw a hypothetical out there, an elite-level player becomes available via trade, and it just makes the perfect sense for the Mets. Are you willing to go into that top five to start moving people? I mean, if it's the right situation. Let's say it's Tatis. Let's take, for argument's sake, for Tatis. Are you moving a Drew Gilbert? Are you moving a Jet Williams?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's actually a unicorn in that, right? Like, Tatis has the combination of he's controllable for his basically his entire career. He's still super young. He gives you positional flexibility. I know that, you know, the Mets wouldn't play him at shortstop, and he's probably not a very good defensive shortstop, but he can theoretically be in the infield, but he's defensively a very, very good right fielder. The way that he adapted to that position has been excellent. He's got a great arm out there. I think that he's like pretty consistently a 7-8 win player. And he could even give you more. And so that type of guy at that age with that contract, yeah, that's a guy that I'm definitely willing to part with a significant number of pieces from what is the rebuilt farm system. But that's a lot because those guys aren't going to pop on the open market. You know, like, it's just very difficult to get that type of player. So I think Tatis is unique in that aspect. But if you were telling me, like, Mike Trout, for instance, was available, as much as I like Mike Trout and I think that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the greatest players that we've ever seen, obviously, like, he would be a massive addition to the Mets. And if he's able to stay healthy, if they have a plan for keeping him healthy, that's huge. But I know that it used to be like this funny thing, like, oh, the Cardinals fans won't trade Yadi Molina for Trout. Unfortunately, like, that time in Trout's career, I think is over. And so that, I think, makes it more of a conversation as to who the scouts really love within the Mets farm system and who they would really like to keep, and whether you're willing to part with them for a guy like Trout. But Tatis, a really unique player because of those reasons that I mentioned, the lead upside, the contract, and the age.
Do the PED suspension, does the PED suspension scare you off for the length of his contract, for considering how young he is? I know he was just as productive this season, and I'm sure he was being tested constantly. Does that stick in your mind if you're pulling the trigger on a big trade? Is that in the back of your mind before you're moving off of, you know, very, very high end prospects to bring in a guy like Tatis? Is that coming into your thought process?
It's not any more in my mind than, you know, like what was the off the field? Did he get into an accident? Is that right?
Yeah, it was an accident. He lied to the team about it. He broke his wrist. Yeah. Yeah, it was unfortunate.
That worries me more.
Yeah, it's good. They're like, he's doing kid shit.
Yeah, because I think that the testing is significant enough that you'd have to be like a real Henry Mejia to think that you're going to get away with that. So I think that there's like limits in place for that would prevent that. But not having a good head on your shoulders, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case or why he lied or why he was even doing that in the offseason. Because there have been other great play, you know, Madison Bumgarner, when I was in San Francisco, he fell off his dirt bike. So,
yeah,
that stuff happens. That I think concerns me a little bit more than the PED suspension does.
Huh. I like that. All right. Taryn, I don't want to speculate too far into Yamamoto, but I'm hoping by the next time we record, we're going to get some more information, hopefully a signing by then, so we can at least analyze it, his signing to the Mets, or see where they're going to pivot if he's not going to be here. So maybe that'll be next episode. But I think that's all we got for today. This is just a quick one, pre-holiday. I want to wish, of course, a Merry Christmas to all of our listeners who are going to be celebrating on the 25th. Taryn, to you and yours, of course, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. What's cooking on your end this weekend?
Yeah, just relaxing, going to go to the beach. And so looking forward to that. And to you guys as well, Merry Christmas. Yeah, well, I'm hoping that we'll get some movement, if for no other reason than the calendar is going to say that we are like 8 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting, that we will start to get some players changing teams, and we'll have more to talk about.
I think we're down to under 100 days until opening day.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. But I like where this was this conversation was going. I hope that there's more trade talk, because it's a very, very peculiar situation. I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, buddy. Everybody, we'll be back next week. We'll try to get one in before, in between the Christmas and the New Year holidays. As always, you guys know the sign off, the call letters are LFGM, and we'll see you guys next time. Peace.